here. Okay. Good morning. This morning I'd like to explore together with you a fascinating and fundamental question. Did Chazal study science? Did their intellectual curiosity and intellectual pursuits extend beyond the Dalet Amot, the four L's of the Beit Midrash? And if so, for what purpose? To what end? For what goal? How did this knowledge serve them? Let's take a look here at source number one. This is a famous Midrash from Eicha Rabbah, where, according to Chazal, there is wisdom to be found among the Gentiles. Famous statement of Chazal, Im yomar lach adam yesh chokhma bagoyim tamim. If an individual tells you there is wisdom found among the Gentiles, believe him. Hadahu dichtiv, and the Midrash cites a verse from Sefer Ovadia, V'ha'avadati chachamim me'edom utvuna me'har esav. Hashem says that on that day of reckoning, which is what the Navi Ovadia is discussing and describing, Hashem says he's going to make wisdom, or really the wise, he's going to make the wise vanish from Edom, and tvuna, understanding, knowledge, vanish from the mountain of Esav. So that would indicate that there is wisdom to be found in Edom, among Esav. In other words, we don't have the monopoly or the copyright on chokhmah, on wisdom. Yesh chokhmah bagoyim. However, the Midrash continues, Yesh Torah bagoyim al tamim. If someone tells you that there is Torah to be found among the Gentiles, and this could mean, you know, not only what we call our Torah, our tradition, but perhaps maybe a system of ethics, a system of morals, which is not rooted in something divine, which is maybe created by mankind, by human being, and therefore inherently flawed, don't believe him. There is no chokhmah. There is chokhmah bagoyim. There is chokhmah found among the Gentiles, but there is no Torah found among the Gentiles. Dichtiv. And here, the Midrash brings a pasuk from Sefer Eicha, and this is sort of the context here, because this is a Midrash on Eicha. Malka v'sareha bagoyim. Ein Torah. Eicha, of course, which laments the destruction of the Holy Temple, it describes how her kings and her leaders are in exile and there is no more Torah. The verse continues and says that her prophets too receive no nevuah, no vision from Hashem. So, interestingly, this pasuk actually is describing the Jewish people. The Jewish people in exile. The Jewish people following the destruction of the temple. But it's almost a play on words that the Midrash uses this pasuk, draws on this pasuk to tell you that bagoyim, meaning among the nations, there is no Torah. Okay? But that's not the pshuto shel mikra. In any case, you see that Chazal believed there is wisdom among the Gentiles. There is truth to be found among the Gentiles. And we have many, many examples of how Chazal themselves were involved in the study of this chokhmah. This wisdom, this chokhmah that we're discussing, that we're talking about, when Chazal talk about chokhmah, it refers to these different chokhmot, these different branches of wisdom. Science, whether it's astronomy, or whether it's physics, or whether it's anatomy and biology. We'll see a number of examples here this morning together, over the next few minutes, how Chazal, our sages, were involved in the study of this wisdom. So take a look here at source number two. Here we have a statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Mishum bar kapara, because of bar kapara. Kol hayodea lechashev, but kufot u'mazalot ve'no choshev. Anyone who knows how, anyone who's able to, who has the ability to make calculations, calculate tkufot, mazalot, the solstices, calculate the constellations, okay, make these astronomical calculations, but does not do so. Ve'eino choshev, alav hakatuv omer, we bring the pasuk that says, Ve'et po'al Hashem lo yabitu u'ma'asei yadav lo ra'u. A pasuk from Yeshayahu Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of Isaiah. They do not take notice of the work of God. They do not see his handiwork. Okay? So we'll come back to this idea that somehow the study of these chochmot, whether it's making astronomical calculations or other types of branches of wisdom and science, it allows us to appreciate Hashem's handiwork. It allows us to take notice of the work of God. That's what the pasuk seems to suggest here, the way Chazal are interpreting this pasuk. Right now here, although the intent, it would seem, would be to utilize this information in order to be able to create the Jewish calendar. Okay. Actually, in fact, you know, you hear, as we saw, have a criticism of one who is able to make such calculations but does not do so. Right? He has a PhD in astronomy and physics, whatever else is necessary, and doesn't apply that to the Torah. Actually, on the same Amud, we have a previous statement of Marzutra, or Rav Zutra, actually, as he's quoted there, who says that one may not even speak to such an individual. In other words, if someone fails to do so, he's able to make these calculations, he's fluent in these sciences and this wisdom and doesn't utilize it, you can't even talk to him. Okay? And then the Gemara goes on to tell us that it actually is a mitzvah to make such calculations. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin shemitzvah al ha'adam l'chashev tkufot u'mazalot. How do we know that it's a mitzvah upon the individual? And then we bring a pasuk from Sefer Dvarim, Perek Dalid, Deuteronomy 4, Shene'emar, which says, u'shmartem v'asitem kihi chochmatchem u'vinatchem le'inei ha'ami. You have to guard and do, perform. This is your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nations. Our involvement in these endeavors, it's a kiddush Hashem in front of the eyes of the nations. Okay, this is a wisdom that Hashem has given us, right? And then the Gemara continues and defines what is this chachma? What is this bina? What is this wisdom and understanding or discernment that the verse speaks of? This calculation of these seasons and constellations. Okay? And in fact, the sage Shmuel was an expert in astronomy. The Mishnah in Masechet Brachot in Perek HaRoeh lists different natural phenomena upon which we're supposed to make different blessings. Right? We have certain blessings when we see or witness certain natural phenomenon. So the Mishnah mentions zikin. So the Gemara asks here in source number 3, my zikin, what are zikin? And Shmuel says they are comets. Amar Shmuel, kochava deshavit. They are comets. So we make a bracha of shekocho ugvurato male olam on zikin. The Gemara wants to know, what are zikin? And Shmuel, an expert in astronomy, says, I know, they are comets. However, then he proceeds to say, he's humble here, he says, V'amar Shmuel nehirin li shvilei dishmaya kishvilei dinaharda. He says, the paths of the sky are as clear to me as the paths of Naharda. That's where he lived. It was a city in Bavel. He studied astronomy. He was very familiar with all these astronomical phenomenon, all of these things in the heavens. They were as clear as him, as day, as clear as the streets in his city. However, he didn't really understand comets. He admits in full humility, Levar mikochava deshavi delo yadana mainihu. Except for comets, I don't really know what they are. Okay, he understood that zikin refers to comets, but to explain exactly, you know, what a comet is, I guess we would need to wait for Haley to come along and explain that. But we also have, it's not on the source sheets here, but the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah on Daf Chof has a statement of Shmuel, again, an expert in astronomy. And he says about himself, Yachelna l'takune l'chula gola. I can fix the calendar for the entire diaspora, the entire gola. Okay, without witnesses, that's the context there. The Gemara there in Masechet Rosh Hashanah is talking about establishing the calendar based on witnesses. So Shmuel, again, who is an expert in astronomy, he was able to calculate these things without witnesses coming and testifying before the Beit Din that they had witnessed the appearance of the new moon. Okay, so he was able to fix the calendar. He was able to be Mekadesh the Chodesh, make leap years, etc. He could do that for the entire diaspora. And Rav studied anatomy. Here in source number 4, the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, there on Daf Hey, discusses giving Rav smicha, granting him permission to answer questions of Jewish law. And so they ask, Yore, can we allow him to answer questions and to rule on matters of Isur v'heter? Yore. Yadin, Yadin. Right? That's why there are different types of smicha today. There's Yore, Yore, Yadin, Yadin. He can adjudicate on monetary matters as well. Yadin, Yadin. And then they want to know, what about Matir b'chorot? Yatir? Can we allow him to permit animals to be offered as korbanot? So that's the question here in source number 4. Sanhedrin daf hei amud bet. So the Gemara says, al yatir, they didn't want to allow him to paskin and to rule on these animals, whether they can be offered as korbanot, if they have mumim, let's say. Why? So the first assumption is, well, maybe he wasn't familiar enough with the anatomy. He wasn't familiar enough with the mumim, the blemishes, the injuries or imperfections on the animal. And that's why the rabbis didn't want to give him that authority. They didn't want to allow him to be matir b'chorot. But then the Gemara has a statement of Rav. V'amar Rav, Shmona asar chadashim gadalti etzel ro'e behema leida ezemum kavua ve'ezemum over. Rav says about himself, I spent 18 months, a year and a half, living among the shepherds in order to understand which mumim are permanent and which mumim heal, in which case that animal may be offered as a korban. So just the opposite. He was an expert. And he wasn't only an expert in the halacha. He was an expert in the mitziyut. He was an expert in the anatomy, in the biology of these animals. He spent 18 months studying this. Doesn't say he spent 18 months in the yeshiva. He spent many more than 18 months, many more months than just 18 in the yeshiva. But he dedicated a year and a half to studying the biology of these animals. And so one suggestion of the Gemara is, well, maybe they didn't want to allow him to be matir b'chorot because he knew too much. And he would be lenient, and others would see this, and they would take liberties. Right? If Rav is lenient, so then, I can be mekil also in this case. The difference is, Rav spent 18 months studying this material, and you did not do so. So he was too much of an expert. That's one suggestion here in the Gemara.
Excuse me, would you rather questions at the end? Or?
I'll take questions at the end, yes. I'll take questions at the end. So, you have many other examples of how Chazal studied science, or in the case here of the Gemara in source number 4, a statement from Rabbi Zeira, here in source number 4, the Gemara in Nida and Daf Chof Amud Bet, Rabbi Zeira, I'm sorry, source number 5, thank you. Source number 5, a statement from Rabbi Zeira in the Gemara in Nida, where Rabbi Zeira was reluctant to paskin on issues of family purity without the requisite knowledge of the physiology involved, without an understanding of the anatomy. And so an understanding of science, medicine, and today technology is so basic, so fundamental, so necessary to paskin, to be able to answer questions of halacha. Now, it doesn't mean that one needs an advanced degree. It doesn't mean that every rabbi has to, you know, get a doctorate in microbiology like Mori v'Rebbe Rav Tendler Zatzal. It doesn't mean that everyone has to be a scientist. But a rabbi needs to know to whom to consult with. It needs to have a Rolodex. Remember those things, Rolodexes? Nowadays, you say Rolodex, no one knows what you're talking about. You have to have a cell phone with contacts, and you have to be able to consult with doctors, maybe mental health professionals, scientists. I mentioned the other week how Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he consulted with electrical engineers in order to be able to understand the physics of electricity, in order to be able to understand what electricity is and why is it forbidden or not forbidden on Shabbat. Okay, you have to understand these things. Right? They don't teach these things in yeshiva. But today with the internet, a person can certainly educate themselves, but a person also, a rabbi, has to have people who are knowledgeable in these fields to be able to approach and consult with. I mentioned how Rabbi Zeira, here in the Gemara, was hesitant to paskin on a question of Nida when he felt that he was inadequate, or he felt that he wasn't educated enough in the biology. You know, Mori, the Rebbe, Rav Tendler, when he would teach Hilchot Nida, he would start with a biology lesson, basic biology, biology 101. Before you're going to learn the laws of family purity, right, you first have to understand how a woman's body works, right, which we men are often missing, often lacking. But when I've taught chassan classes to chatanim, I begin with a basic lesson in biology. You know, oftentimes these young chatanim have no idea what we're talking about here. And so, you know, I even have diagrams and illustrations and things that I've, you know, gotten off the internet, because people need to know what you're talking about here. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, he would often consult with my Rebbe, Rav Tendler, his son-in-law, on issues of medicine and science and technology. And Rav Moshe himself was very worldly and broad and aware, and understood that a posek has to be worldly and broad and aware and educated. He didn't go to university, but he read a newspaper every day. Now, some people might find that shocking, scandalous. Shanda, Moshe Feinstein read a newspaper? But yes, every day during his lunch break from the yeshiva, he would read the newspaper. And he would say that the newspaper is his window into the world. Because a posek has to have that awareness, has to be familiar with what's going on outside the four amot of the Beit Midrash. Now, this approach to science and chokhmah, wisdom in general, and these different disciplines, is articulated in a wonderful comment of the Netziva Volozhin to Parshat Bahalotcha. Here, take a look at source number 6. This comes from his Hamek Davar. It's another passage that my Rebbe was very fond of quoting. Aaron, of course, at the beginning of Parshat Balotcha, is commanded that when he kindles the lamps of the menorah, Balotcha et anerot el mul pnei ha-menorah ya'iru shivat anerot. All of the branches are supposed to face the center branch. So those 6 branches are supposed to face the center branch of the menorah. And so take a look at what the Netziv writes here. This is wonderful. He writes, Mishum shebetorah shebal pen nichlal sheva chochmot, shebli yediyah b'chol ha-chochmot, yefshar lavo lekama ikare Torah. Because the Torah Sheba'al Peh contains within it the 7 branches of wisdom, without which one cannot come to an understanding of many of the ikare Torah, many of the essentials. Kimo shirei klayim v'uktzin v'kidush ha-chodesh v'od harbe inene shirim. We're talking about forbidden mixtures and all different kinds of things. And he mentions here kidush ha-chodesh, calculating the month we mentioned before. And all sorts of measurements. Shirim, you have to be able to make all sorts of calculations. Well, if you're lacking in basic mathematics, and this is just one of many arguments one can make for the importance of a tochnit haliba, a core curriculum, which is always the subject of much discussion, debate, and controversy here in the state of Israel. Forcing or enforcing a core curriculum. If that's necessary. A basic understanding of mathematics is necessary to be able to calculate the shiurim, to be able to perform the mitzvot Hashem. V'chol ha-chochmot ba'u l'shamesh u'leva'er azharat, or azharot Torah shebichtav. And all of these branches of wisdom, all of these disciplines, they come to assist l'shamesh u'leva'er and illuminate the mitzvot of the Torah. So, if you understand what the Netziv is saying here, and why he's commenting on the candles of the menorah, the branches of the menorah. Right? What's this metaphor for the Netziv? For the Netziv, this idea that the branches must face the center branch. That means that these branches of wisdom, for the Netziv, this is a metaphor, these branches of wisdom come to shed light on the center branch, which is Torah. Torah, of course, is at our core, at our center. But these branches, which are supposed to face the center branch, they shed their light, they shine, they illuminate the center branch. For the Netziv, they serve the Torah. They illuminate the Torah. They allow us to perform the mitzvot HaTorah, as we said before. An understanding, a familiarity, and again, even just a basic understanding of chachmah, of these different disciplines of wisdom, science, mathematics, physics, medicine, and today technology, are indispensable in order to be able to serve Hashem, to perform the mitzvot HaTorah. That's what the Netziv is saying. And this idea is often attributed to the Vilna Gaon. The Netziv here, in source number 6, doesn't quote the Gaon explicitly. But this idea is often attributed to the Vilna Gaon. Now, for many, the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Eliyahu ben Shlomo Zalman of Vilna, Eliyahu HaChassid, personifies the perfected Torah personality with his complete unflinching dedication to Torah study. For many, he's kulo Torah, right? He represents the Torah-only approach. Yet, the Gaon, from many, many sources and testimonies, we have possessed a profound knowledge and deep understanding of what we would call today secular studies, these branches of wisdom, even encouraging the study of secular subjects. In their introduction to Aderet Eliyahu, the Vilna Gaon's own children attest to the fact that by the time he was 12 years old, he had mastered all 7 branches of secular wisdom. 7 branches. By the way, this is something that goes back already to the Greeks, this idea of 7 branches of wisdom, 7 branches of knowledge, 7 branches of philosophy even. That's what the Vilna Gaon and the Netziv are drawing on. But his own children, they testify that by the time he was 12, he had mastered all of these branches of wisdom, all of these disciplines. And according to much testimony, the Gaon openly encouraged his students to pursue these chochmot, this secular knowledge. If you take a look here at source number 7, and I apologize, it's a little bit difficult to read, because this comes from a sefer that I believe was only published once, meaning it was, you know, possibly reprinted, you know, offset, but it hasn't been digitized, hasn't been redone. It was published in The Hague in Tuf Kuf Mem, that's 1780. Okay? And this is the introduction to Sefer Euclides by Rav Baruch Mishklov, who was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. And this is a translation of Euclid's Elements into Hebrew. Euclid is considered the father of geometry. He lays down the major principles of geometry in this classic work, which was written around 300 BCE. And here, a close Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Baruch of Shklov, translates Euclid's The Elements into Hebrew. And in his introduction, he writes the following. Okay, so it's a little bit difficult to read. I'm reading here from the middle of the second line. He says, Shamati, and actually he even gives the date, his Bechodesh Tevet, Tuf Kuf Lamed Chet. Shamati mipi kadosh, I heard from his holy lips, he's referring here to the Vilna Gaon, ki kefi ma sheyechsar la'adam yidiot mishari ha'chochmot, according to the degree, to the extent that one is deficient in all of these different types of wisdoms, l'umat zeh, according to that, yechsar lo me'a yedot b'chochmat ha'torah, ki ha'torah v'ha'chochma nitzmadim yachad. To the extent that one is deficient in secular wisdom, in these branches of wisdom, these different disciplines, he will be deficient a hundredfold in his understanding of Torah, for Torah and wisdom are bound up together. This is a profound statement. And he continues and writes that the Vilna Gaon commanded him to translate into Hebrew as much secular wisdom as possible. He commanded his Talmidim to translate the classics into Hebrew. Why would the Vilna Gaon do such a thing? Well, obviously, he wanted to make these works accessible to the broader Jewish community, to educate them. Now, should anyone question the veracity of this account, as some have, they'll say, oh, well, Baruch Shklov wasn't such a close Talmid, or he was a maskil. He was, a reformer. He was an enlightened one. He doesn't truly represent the Vilna Gaon. This was published, as I mentioned, in The Hague in 1780, during the Vilna Gaon's own lifetime. So for anyone who questions the veracity of this account here, this was published during the Vilna Gaon's life. And one of the Vilna Gaon's closest disciples, and this there is no argument about, Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, writes in the introduction to his Pata Shulchan. Pata Shulchan is a very important sefer about the laws of Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov himself made Aliyah, experienced tremendous tragedy and setback and difficulty, which he describes. As we know, the Vilna Gaon sent his Talmidim to make Aliyah. The Vilna Gaon himself wanted to come to Israel, but was unable to. He was prevented from heaven, whatever that means. But he encouraged his Talmidim to do so. And many of his Talmidim did. And in fact, they created a Jewish majority here in the city of Jerusalem in the early 19th century. Up until that point, there was not a Jewish majority here. So, and he encouraged them to come and bring the redemption. He believed that the redemptive process, the redemption of the Jewish people, the final redemption is going to come through the natural process, b'derech hateva. And so he encouraged his students to come to Israel and bring about the redemption. And this is the redemption that we're seeing today. They were the chalutzim, so to speak, before the Zionist chalutzim. They were the real chalutzim, okay, along with the other Mevasrei Tzion, along with the Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov who came. So the Pata Shulchan here in source number 8, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov writes there in the introduction, also he describes how the Vilna Gaon explained that secular wisdom is essential for the Holy Torah, to understand it, and it's included within it. Okay? He writes, Kol HaChochmot, I'm reading from the second line here, Nitzrachim L'Torateinu HaKadosha, they're all necessary for our Holy Torah, Uklimba, and they are included in it. V'Yidiyam Kulam L'Tachlitam V'Haskiram Chochmot Chochmat Algebra U'Mishulashim V'Handasa V'Chachmat Musika. Okay, and he says, and the Vilna Gaon mastered all of these things, right? He knew them. L'Tachlitam, he knew them to their end, meaning he had complete mastery over all of these disciplines, including algebra and trigonometry and geometry, and even music. So, for Chazal, and our great Gaonim, Rishonim, and Achronim that followed, an understanding of science and nature is indispensable in order to truly understand the Torah. And, as I mentioned, to apply the halacha, to paskin, to answer questions of halacha. But sometimes, and this is the challenge maybe, sometimes the scientific information or medical pronouncements or assumptions based on science in the Talmud are incorrect or inconsistent with modern science or with modern understanding. And how do we grapple with that? How do we reconcile that? If we said that, you know, the Chachamim studied science, a lot of times there are things in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, that would seem to fly in the face of science. Like, for instance, the Mishnah in Chulin, which discusses the kashrut of an animal missing its kidneys or other vital organs, which isn't a question because an animal like that couldn't live. How can you discuss the status of that animal if that animal cannot survive without those vital organs? It wouldn't be alive. Or the Mishnah in Chulin, which discusses the ritual status of an achbar, a rodent that is chetzio basar vechetzio adama, half rodent or half flesh, half dirt. In terms of tumat sheretz, imposing a certain type of minor impurity, what if you touch the part of it that's flesh, or what if you touch the part of it that's dirt? Can such a thing even exist? Does such a thing even exist? So how do we deal with that? How do we reconcile that? Right? Do we say that no, it can't be? Chazal, our sages, they are infallible. They are incapable of making mistakes, or no? Do we answer simply that Chazal based themselves on the science of their day, the science available to them? The scientific beliefs and medical beliefs of the times in which they lived. Okay? They based themselves sometimes on what they saw and observed, on empiricism, what they saw in nature, but sometimes they based themselves on the scientific and medical community of their day. Again, as we said, they believed, Yesh Chochma Bagoyim. There is wisdom to be found among the Gentiles, among the Gentile scientists and doctors. And sometimes even they based themselves, it would seem, on the texts, the scientific texts, the medical texts of those days, the works of natural history of the Greeks and Romans from that period, like the first century Roman naturalist Pliny the Elder, which describes such very cases. So Chazal, as we know, often dealt in theoreticals. They may not have seen such a creature, such an animal missing its kidneys or other vital organs, but they asked the question, what would be if such a thing would be alive, if we would see such a thing? They're dealing in theoreticals. Or they may not have ever seen a half-mouse, half-dirt creature, which the Mishnah and Chulin and the Gemara elsewhere discusses, but maybe they were, again, pondering the issue, what if there would be such a thing? Because they saw it in the medical texts or the scientific textbooks that were available to them at the time. Right? The Gemara, for instance, in Shabbat, on Daf Kuf Zayin, says that, at least according to one opinion, it's permitted to kill lice on Shabbat. Why is it permitted to kill lice on Shabbat? De'ena para virava, because they do not engage in piria virivia. They do not reproduce. They do not multiply. Why? Because Chazal believed in spontaneous generation, just like the whole world did at the time. And that is not apikorsis to say. That is not a denigration, chas v'shalom, of our Chazal. That doesn't mean that we don't have emunat chachamim. It just means that we understand that they base themselves on the science of the times, just like we do today, right? And despite the fact that, you know, more modern poskim, such as the Mishnah Brura, rule, just like the Gemara, that even today, one who kills a louse is exempt. It's not called Netilat Neshama, which is a violation of one of the 39 Mlachot, Shochet, slaughtering. Right? Already in the 18th century, the Italian rabbi and physician, Rav Yitzchak Lampranti, author of a rabbinic encyclopedia, Pachad Yitzchak, he already rules in the 18th century that today, with what we know, this is after Leeuwenhoek, the father of microbiology, and after the advent of the microscope, with what we know today, that lice do indeed lay eggs and reproduce like every other insect, one would be chayav. It's not permitted to kill a louse. Okay? But in any case, it's not that chas v'shalom, Chazal were in error. They got it wrong. No. They trusted the scientists and doctors of their day. As we said, they believed Yesh Chochma Bagoyim. And so great Gaonim and Rishonim, like the Rambam, and many that would come later, they write that we're not obligated to follow the medical advice of the Talmud. And the Rambam would say about himself, if the medical advice that I'm recording here in his Hilchot Deot or in his medical works, the Rambam wrote books of medicine. If it doesn't shtim, if it's not consistent with the current trend in medicine, with the current belief in medicine and science, don't do it. You have no obligation. Because our great chachamim were basing themselves on the science of the time, on the scientific community and on the medical community during the days in which they lived. And we all saw how during COVID, the scientific and medical community can make mistakes trying to figure things out in real time. Okay? So, in another 1,000 years, right, from now, many of the things that we believe to be true may also be proven to be wrong or inconsistent with the current thought or trend or practice in medicine or science. And that shouldn't shake our faith in Chazal. They based themselves on the science of the time because they believed Yesh Chochma Bagoyim, and that Chochma is so important in order to be able to understand Torah. It illuminates the Torah in order to be able to understand how to rule, how to paskin, how to live the Torah. Okay? But I believe that for Chazal, it's not only utilitarian, meaning it's not only to be able to know how to interpret the Torah and to paskin, to appreciate the mitziyut, but I believe there's also an intrinsic benefit, an intrinsic value in studying chokhmah, in studying this secular knowledge, these different disciplines, being broad, being worldly. And I'll point you to the Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Chofchet here in source number 9. The Gemara here, where I've underlined, describes Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of our great sages, and it says the following about him. Amru Alav, they said about Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Nasi in Yavna. Very, very important sage. Shelo hiniach mikra u'mishnah. He didn't neglect any passage in the Tanakh or in the Mishnah, Gemara halachot v'agadot, in the Gemara, halacha, agada, the different homiletic passages or stories and lessons in the Talmud. He mastered all that information. Kol haTorah kula, dikduke Torah, v'dikduke sofrim. All the minutia of the Torah and the sofrim, the scribes, perhaps a reference to the early chachamim, the neviim. Kalim v'chamurim, u'gzerot shavot, let's call it, minor laws, okay? And chamurim, the more stringent laws, u'gzerot shavot, and the different types of inferences and the rules in which the Torah is explicated, the different midot shatora nidreshet bahen, okay, gzeirashava, etc. Tkufot ugmatriot. So tkufot we saw earlier. Tkufot is a calculation of the seasons and the solstices, making those astronomical calculations. So you see, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was also familiar with astronomy. The gematriot, Hebrew numerology. Right now, here he wasn't using gematria to give a cute vort at like an engagement party where he's trying to connect the name of the chatan to the name of the kala or something, which we've all seen at an engagement party or sheva brachot. There, his study of gematria was in order to darshan halacha, perhaps to make different connections and draw out and deduce halacha. He was familiar with sichat malachei hasharet, v'sichat sheidim, v'sichat dekalim. Now here, I'm not going to pretend like I truly understand what this statement means, but he was familiar with the conversations of the ministering angels, the conversations of demons, the conversations of literally palm trees. I don't know if that means he spoke to the trees or he spoke to animals like, Dr. Doolittle or something, but he was familiar perhaps with mysticism. That's perhaps what it means. He was fluent in all areas of Torah, even the very obscure areas, including Jewish mysticism. And then, this is important for our discussion this morning, Mishlot Kovsin. he was familiar and studied folk tales, literally the parables of people who do laundry, right? Kovsin, like kvisa. But it refers to folk tales. He studied literature, okay? Mishlot Shualim, parables of foxes, that too, you know, a type of literature. So he was familiar with different folk tales and literature. Davar gadol v'davar katan, great things and small things. Here, the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Chet describes how the Nasi Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was fluent in Kol HaTorah Kula and fluent in all human endeavors, all areas of knowledge, all different kinds of disciplines. Okay, and you see that he even studied literature. Now, oftentimes Chazal quote statements, you know, folk sayings, statements of, you know, the Am, not even necessarily Jews, but, you know, oh, this is what, you know, these traveling itinerant merchants will say, or this is something that the, you know, the those who travel on sea, the shoremen, you know, they use this expression in order to kind of illustrate some Jewish idea. And there's a value in that, in being worldly and broad, in order to be able to appreciate Torah, not necessarily even to Paskin, but in order to transmit ideas, to articulate deep ideas. If I can tell you a story, it need not be a Rebbe story, but if I could tell you a story or offer up an analogy, an allegory, a metaphor, oftentimes that's a lot more powerful than trying to prove something, you know, based on a pasuk or based on a statement of Chazal. If I, you know, share a folk saying or a story to illustrate the point, oftentimes that, you know, can pull on the heartstrings and have maybe even a deeper effect at times, can sometimes be more impactful, right? Obviously, that's not enough. It's not enough. But this enhances, I think, the Jewish experience. And this is something that I once heard in the name of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, that Rav Aaron, he lamented after having been at the Levaya for Rav Aaron Cutler, who for many years was at the helm of the yeshiva in Lakewood. He founded the yeshiva in Lakewood. Rav Lichtenstein, after hearing the Hespedim, was left disappointed that those who were maspid Rav Aaron, and this is Rav Aaron Cutler, those who were maspid Rav Aaron Cutler, you know, they belonged to that Torah-only world, and they weren't able to draw on any, let's say, stories or anecdotes or metaphor, or they weren't able to describe Rav Aaron in broader terms, according to Rav Lichtenstein, because maybe they were lacking in their secular education. And had they been more educated, had they had more exposure to literature, we know Rav Aaron studied literature at Harvard. He had a degree in English literature. So that was sort of his point here, saying, had they been exposed to more secular knowledge and wisdom and been more broad, they could have better articulated the essence of Rav Aaron Cutler. Okay, because again, there's something intrinsic. It's not only to be able to paskin, but there's something intrinsic. There's a value in being broad and worldly and educated. And through studying and appreciating these chochmot and Hashem's wondrous world, right, his wonderful bria, his glorious creation, we can try and maybe understand Hashem himself. And this is best articulated by the Rambam here in source number 10. In Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah, at the beginning of the second chapter, the Rambam defines the mitzvah to love and to fear Hashem. Now, how is that accomplished? How can one love Hashem? Right? Can you truly love someone or something that you don't know, that you don't understand, this transcendent being? How can you love God or even fear God if you don't understand God? So first, according to the Rambam, one must engage in a pursuit to try to understand Hashem. Well, how is that accomplished? So take a look at source number 10, where I've underlined. This is incredible. The Rambam asks, "V'hechi haderech le'ahavato v'yirato?" What is the path to love Hashem and to fear Hashem? And the Rambam continues, "B'sha'a she'itbonen ha'adam b'ma'asav uvru'av ha'niflaim ha'gdolim v'yirameihen chochmato she'en la'erech v'loketz miyad hu ohev u'mishabech u'mefa'er u'mitavet ta'ava gdola le'da Hashem ha'gadol." When a person begins to contemplate and study Hashem's wondrous deeds and His wondrous creation and glorious creation, and appreciates Hashem's infinite wisdom that surpasses all comparison, ein la erech, ein la keitz, it has no limits. When you begin to study Hashem's creation through, again, the study of these wisdoms, these disciplines, and you appreciate this glorious world, and you understand that Hashem has a wisdom that is without end, without boundary, that surpasses all comparison. Immediately, the Rambam writes, "Miyad hu ohev," he will come to love Hashem, "umishabech umfeer," he will come to praise and glorify Hashem, "umitaveh," and he'll come to yearn for Hashem, "ta'ava gdola," with a tremendous desire, "leida Hashem agadol," in order to truly understand Hashem's great name, Kimosha Amar David, as David HaMelech said in Tehillim Membet, "Tzama nafshi le'elokim le'el chai." My soul thirsts for the Lord, for the living God. According to the Rambam, the mitzvah to love Hashem is performed, is observed by this pursuit of the knowledge of Hashem through understanding His Bri'ah, His creation. And then the Rambam continues and says, and then one will realize how insignificant he is, the individual is, in the grand scheme of things, and then come to a fear of Hashem. But the study and understanding of Chochmah, of these different disciplines, science, medicine, today technology, they are indispensable in understanding Hashem's world, Hashem's Torah, in applying the Halacha, and through our study of Hashem's wondrous world, we can begin to try and understand Hashem Himself. Appreciating His glorious creation brings us to the love and fear of Hashem. Okay, I'll take any questions or comments. You wanted to ask something earlier?
Well, I guess I don't have to ask anymore. Why not?
Okay, so the Hava Mina could be, you could suggest that maybe we are supposed to engage in the study of Torah alone, without all these other chochmot. And some will go as far as to draw on the pasuk from Tehillim, "Sod Hashem li re'av," that Hashem reveals His secrets to those who fear Him. And as we saw last week, we saw a passage from the Gemara which would seem to indicate that maybe Hashem reveals certain things, reveals information to individuals, to rabbis, to poskim, to the chachamim, to chazal, to our sages. You could say, well, maybe hafachba v'hafachba, you shall toil it and turn it over, toil in it and turn it over. Why? Ki kulaba, for everything is found in it. And there are those who take that approach. And they believe that chazal's understanding of science and these different disciplines came through their study of the Torah. I think that's very difficult for a number of reasons. But that would be the Hava Mina. That would be the Hava Mina. Okay? But I don't believe that to be a true reading. And I certainly think that if you look at all these passages of Chazal, we only saw really the Roshei Prakim. We only saw a smattering of the passages where Chazal are drawing on the Chochmah that was available to them at their time. It was clear that they were familiar with the Chochmah at their time. And then we can also, you know, if you say that Sod Hashem li Re'av, as sometimes Chazal do, we saw just last week an example of that. We were discussing how sometimes a posek benefits from siyata dishmaya, from divine assistance. We saw, according to the Gemara, soda shem l'riyav. That's one teretz, how Ben Zoma knew something, which maybe it's not so clear how he would have known it. The other terutz in the Gemara gives, maybe he had been married and gotten divorced, or maybe he learned it from his rebbeim. So there are other suggestions, but one suggestion is, no, Hashem imbued him with that wisdom. So the problem with the approach that Chazal's understanding of science came from Hashem, Sod Hashem Lireyav, it came through their study of Torah and Torah alone. The problem in that is, well then, what do you say when you find that their scientific understanding is incorrect? Right? How is that possible? If it comes through the Torah, if Hashem revealed it to them, how could it be incompatible? So they would have to engage in all sorts of apologetics and acrobatics and say, well, no, maybe during their time that was correct scientifically, but nowadays it's not correct. Maybe during their time such an animal could exist, but nowadays it doesn't exist anymore. It's become extinct. So they'd have to engage in all sorts of apologetics and acrobatics. Unless you say that, no, they believed, like we began with, Yesh Chochma Bagoyim Ta'amin, there is wisdom to be found among the Gentiles, and they were familiar with the science and medicine of that of their age, and that's what they were basing themselves on. And so if they made a mistake, they're not to be faulted, right? It's because they based themselves on the science of the times. It's the textbooks that they were looking at that are incorrect. Yeah. We have a whole Masechet Horeyot that begins with what happens when the Beit Din HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, makes a mistake, and there's a certain korban that they have to bring. Right? No one is infallible. Only Hashem is infallible. Except that we're not blaming Chazal, and it shouldn't be, God forbid, seen as a zilzul, a denigration of Chazal. Just the opposite. We are, in a sense, redeeming them. We're saying that they're not at fault. They were basing themselves on the science that was available to them. On the textbooks that they were looking at, on the doctors that they were talking to, that they were consulting with.
I see. Okay. Chazal, yeah. They didn't know, okay, science that would be, yeah, about 500 years later.
But you do have this approach that Chazal's understanding of science and medicine came through their understanding or study of Torah, was revealed to them by Hashem. Ad kedei kach, you've all these Rebbe stories of, great Gaonim, great Gedolei Yisrael, who never studied medicine, but somehow directed a person to a certain doctor for some, very risky procedure, and then went ahead, the Gadol, the Rav, the Posek, whomever, the Gaon went ahead and over the phone instructed the doctor, the head of the head neurosurgeon, how to proceed with this sophisticated surgery, and this rabbi in Bnei Brak or whoever, who had no knowledge whatsoever of medicine, over the phone is somehow able to intuit, somehow able to instruct this doctor, because Sod Hashem Lireyav. I think that approach is, I find that very difficult to accept. Okay, and I think that. That if you do take that approach, it raises all sorts of other questions that you have to struggle with.
Although, your Rebbe, I heard from Hor that I think he talked about the fallopian tubes or something.
Okay. Look, we do know that they had a very good sense of anatomy and biology based on their observation, based on, I'm sure there were chachamim that witnessed dissections. Okay, yeah. Okay, have a wonderful day. We will see you all, Bezrat Hashem, next Wednesday.